Welcome, everyone. It's great to see everyone here who's interested in teenage pregnancy prevention. And it's nice of you to stick around to hear the presentations of other presenters today. I'm sure they appreciate you staying. My presentation is, as this slide indicates, Assessing Community Readiness for Teen Pregnancy Prevention. It was a key informant qualitative study that I conducted this last year on behalf of an organization, a national organization called Advocates for Youth. Does anyone here know Advocates for Youth? Okay, it's one of the leading national organizations that has long promoted youth concerns for the well-being of youth, and particularly around issues of accessing reproductive health care and providing resources for them. This is part of a CDC grant. It's currently in its, it's just starting its third year as of October 1st, and I have nothing to disclose. So the background about this grant, as I say, it's just finished its second year. It's entitled entitled Teenage Pregnancy Prevention, Integrating Services, Programs, and Strategies Through Community-Wide Initiatives, and it spans the years 2010 to 2015. There are nine state organizations and community-based organizations that were funded by the CDC for this five-year period, and the list of those nine organizations is listed in the last page of the handout. Interestingly enough, one of them is from North Carolina, North Carolina Campaign for Adolescent Pregnancy Prevention. And interestingly enough, a lot of them are from the Southeast, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina. So the responsibility that the grant was really focused on for the communities in which these nine state and community-based organizations serve to reduce teenage pregnancy by 15%, largely through two strategies. One, foster the increased use of evidence-based sexuality education programs in the communities, largely through the school systems. And the second was to work with the clinic providers, the family planning clinic providers in these communities to design improved access and user-friendly services, particularly for adolescents. And as there are five national organizations that are part of this grant. They are called Part B grantees, and they provide the technical assistance and training to the nine Part A grantees. And among these five include Advocates for Youth in Washington, D.C., who I'm associated with, and was previously associated with on another five-year CDC grant on promoting evidence-based programs for youth in the communities across the United States. So this is really our second go-around with the CDC on this particular topic, and it's been exciting to be part of that initiative. My study aim in conducting these key informant study, much as I did in the first five-year CDC grant, was really to collect the qualitative information from them, because there's a huge data collection, a huge quantitative data collection that CDC is operating. But this is one of the few qualitative studies that CDC is supporting. Basically, was conducted at the end of the first year, which was a planning year for all of the nine state and local organizations. And so this was really the point at which I said, how did it go this first year in terms of designing the initiatives to move into your community? What did it take for you to ramp up, to get the support of stakeholders, to invest the community in your work? So I want to share with you then the results of four of the research questions that we studied. Number one, of course, was how far along they were in actually using a community mobilization model that had been proposed to them when they began the study. The second was to determine whether or not there was existing support for evidence-based interventions, and by evidence-based, I mean simply the sexuality programs that have already been shown nationally to have the desired effect and an impact on the behavior of our youth. The third was to determine their current efforts to improve contraceptive access for youth and how far they were along in working with the clinics, providers within their communities to make them youth-friendly. And the fourth was really to begin talking about them, about project sustainability, which CDC increasingly has considered to be very important, that we don't wait until the fifth year of the grant to begin working with the grantees about what's going to happen next year when the CDC money ends, what's going to happen in your community. So right from the get-go, in the very first year, CDC said to all the grantees, we want you to build into all of your activities a project sustainability initiative. an effort in that respect. So what I did was conducted phone interviews. Some were phone interviews, some were in person, with the 9 project coordinators, one in each of these state and community organizations. They were tape recorded. We provided the transcripts. Subsequently conducted thematic cross-case analyses of these cases, identifying the categories and the themes, much as our first presenter talked about, and then synthesized the information relative to identifying commonalities among the 9 grantees and also what variances existed in them simply because of their location or the nature of the population that they were working with and differences within their communities. So what I want to share with you is 10 strengths that we identified among these 9 grantees and some of the challenges they're experiencing within the communities, and interestingly enough, also with the CDC and the national partners, because it's been a bit of a stretch for some of them to accommodate the kind of intensity of TA and technical assistance that they've faced in their very first year. So among the grantees, we found that most of them, all of them, had engaged in a needs assessment within their community in that very first planning year. And that was done through a series of surveys, and it was also done with focus groups. So they went out and they talked to key stakeholders and got data from teachers and clinical partners and youth and so forth. So they really had a good appreciation of what was the readiness of their community to engage in this activity. And from that, they were able to identify really who the key stakeholders were that were really going to come together and to really work with them over this 5-year period to really change attitudes within the community and to get, like I say, the evidence-based programs and the clinics to really change some of their strategies for reaching youth. Overall, we found strong leadership within the organizations, a positive sense of wanting to work together to achieve the goals of the grant. These are all people that are 100% committed to teenage pregnancy prevention, and it's really exciting to see that initiative. They were very mindful of the importance of bringing diverse people to 3 teams that they were all mobilizing within their communities. One was a core partner leadership team that represented all the people that were invested in the grant that in some cases had a financial investment as subcontractors on the grant. A community action team that represented people from the faith community, parents, kind of the grassroots of the community in some sense, and the third was the youth partner leadership team. So it was an expectation that each of the 9 organizations would develop and would have each of these 3 teams that would really carry out the community mobilization effort. Some of the 9 state organizations already had support of schools within their communities and their willingness to implement evidence-based programs within the communities. And some, in fact, there was a mandate in the states and in New York City. One of the partners already had a citywide mandate that said every New York City school will have sex education within its school systems. They found that parents were supportive of this initiative, and they found that some of the community clinic providers were also willing to come on board. They recognized that teens would need to be educated about their rights in terms of access to reproductive care and began that initiative, and there was already beginning effort to recognize the importance of sustainability and recognize that sustainability was going to be dependent on buy-in from the community. Among the challenges, recognition or the challenge of these were all very high-risk communities. They had just a whole range of, you know, a lot of problems and poverty and violence and all those, you know, other high-risk youth issues, substance abuse, and so forth. And so the question becomes is, how important is teen pregnancy relative to, you know, other serious problems? And so they faced that issue. In the high-risk communities, there was oftentimes too few services that they were going to be accessed. Some schools aren't ready to come on board in terms of promoting evidence-based programs, believing that some of the curriculums are either too long or don't address the needs of the youth populations. Not all the clinical partners are prepared to make substantive changes in the times that they're open and serve youth, in the environments that they provide, and in policies that support youth access. So that was identified as an early challenge. Getting people to serve on the 3 teams and keeping them engaged and helping them to own the issue was seen as problematic among many of the organizations. And then, of course, like I say, simply dealing with all the bureaucracy of the CDC and five national partners felt overwhelming much of the time for these organizations. And, of course, they were already beginning to experience controversy in rolling out some of these initiatives within their communities. And so we identified, as part of this key informant study, a series of recommendations that CDC and the five national partners ideally would work toward. One, of course, is looking at the infrastructure of the organizations and helping them to develop the infrastructure within their communities, helping them to manage the recruitment and retention process of team members requires a lot of energy, helping to engage a lot of grassroots organizations, particularly parents, faith leaders, and school administrators, helping them to identify evidence-based sexuality curriculums that would be a good fit and that would be acceptable within their communities. The need for training and technical assistance in terms of how to manage controversy within the communities, because they had begun to see that there was resistance to some of these initiatives within their communities. The other thing, of course, was that many of these organizations were perceived as the experts, and so trying to really get buy-in from the community members to be seen as the experts and to take ownership was problematic, because they always wanted to defer to the state organization. They said, "You're the experts, just tell us what to do." And of course, this model was, "We want you to tell us what you are prepared to do." So that was interesting. And then, of course, the whole issue of sustainability was going to be an issue. CDC has received and reviewed these recommendations along with the national partners, so they're currently engaged in thinking about how they would provide better assistance to these organizations. And this was the first of what is actually going to be three key informant interviews to determine over these 5 years what their progress is in moving toward community mobilization. These are the Part A grantees, these nine organizations. Like I say, they're in your handout. Four of them are statewide level organizations. Four of them are city or county health departments. And then we have the University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio, which is serving that community. And the Part A grantees, the Part B grantees, the national partners, as I say, includes Advocates for Youth, who I work for, and other organizations, Healthy Teen Network and the National Campaign, probably two of the more notable other national partners invested in this project. And here's the website information for Advocates for Youth. Thank you for your interest.